for standing by. This is the conference operator. Welcome to the AGT Food and Ingredients Inc. Third Quarter 2017 Financial Results Conference Call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode, and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To join the question queue, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. Should you need assistance during the conference call, you may signal an operator by pressing star and zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Omar Al-Khatib, Director, Corporate Affairs and Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, operator. Good morning, and thank you for joining us on our third quarter 2017 conference call. On the line with us today, we have Murad Al-Khatib, President and CEO of AGT Food and Ingredients, Lori Ireland, our Chief Financial Officer, and Gaytan Barasa, our Chief Operating Officer. Before we get started with the call, I'd like to remind everyone that today's call may include forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements are given as of the date of this call and involve certain risks and uncertainties. A number of factors and assumptions were applied in the formulation of such statements, and actual results could differ materially. This call may also include references to certain non-IFRS financial measures. For additional information with respect to forward-looking statements, the factors and assumptions, as well as a reconciliation to IFRS measures, we direct you to our news release, our website, as well as our recent filings on SEDAR. I'd like to ask Murad to make some questions and then or some comments, and then we'll go to questions. Murad?
Great. Thank you very much, Omar. Welcome to our conference call this morning. Our business has continued to be impacted by market conditions noted in recent quarters, impacting our volumes, margins, especially in our core pulses segment, where we have seen decreases in our metric tons invoiced, as well as a reduction in our grain margins. While earnings are temporarily constrained, our business remains very liquid, and we believe in the long-term profitability of our diversified product offerings, global origins, and logistics solutions for our global clients. The market dynamics we see today are the markets that have been impacted by an oversupply in production and consumption markets, volatility in prices, including low prices overall, and a disconnect between expectations of value from the farm gate to market pricing and consumption markets, affecting margins overall. Non-tariff governmental import policies in India have resulted in relative uncertainty of markets and a sense of general malaise in the commodity markets, and uncertainty in the global economy are resulting from geopolitical forces in many regions in the world. I'd like to discuss the market dynamics and their impact on our business, but first, I'm going to ask Lori, our CFO, to provide an update on the quarter. Lori?
Thanks, Murad. AGT continued to be impacted significantly by global market conditions, as Murad said. This was identified in earlier periods, and it affects global pulse and staple food markets. This impact affected volumes and margins in all areas of AGT's business, particularly in AGT's pulse and grain processing segment, with decreases in metric tons invoiced, as well as in grain margins when comparing Q3 this year to Q3 of the prior quarter and, or I'm sorry, the prior year, as well as to the prior quarter. In the food ingredients and packaged food segment, adjusted gross profit per metric ton increased in Q3 of 2017 compared to Q2 of 2017, and decreased when compared to the same quarter in the prior year. The results were overall relatively consistent with the prior quarter due to consistent margins on sales from both the Minot facility and pasta. In the Q3 period, customers in this segment typically enter seasonal summer slowdown in maintenance cycles during the July and August months, resulting in a reduction to shipments. The bulk handling and distribution segment showed increased adjusted gross profit per metric ton for Q3 2017 compared to Q2 2017, and compared to the same period in the prior year. This is due primarily to strong margins on sales out of AGT's Indian subsidiary. Adjusted gross profit per metric ton and adjusted EBITDA per metric ton in this segment for the nine months ended September 30, 2017, were relatively consistent when compared to the nine months ended September 30, 2016. Adjusted EBITDA per metric ton for quarter three 2017 decreased when compared to Q2 2017 and to Q3 2016, due to lower metric tons invoiced and, as well as consistent expenses offsetting this. AGT's balance sheet and liquidity are improved as a result of recent capital transactions. The recent Fairfax Financial Holdings no-called preferred securities in the amount of $190 million with a 99-year term has provided capital that was utilized for the reduction of bank indebtedness. Net debt was reduced to $386.3 million at Q3 2017 compared to $543.7 million in Q2 of 2017. Net working capital as a percentage of trailing 12-month revenue has decreased from 20.43% at September 2016 to 17.84% at September 30, 2017. And at September 30, 2017, AGT had total operating lines available of $255.1 million, with $22.7 million of the facilities utilized, leaving $232.4 million unutilized. The weighted average interest rates on available operating lines at September 30, 2017 was 3.6%. AGT will continue to focus on the three pillars to our strategy, which are summarized as 1. Developing an integrated farm gate to ingredient and retail consumer package program for AGT's customers under AGT's brands and as co-packing supply chain partner. 2. Growing AGT's bulk handling business to monetize the earnings potential of its unique grain origination and logistical assets by linking these efforts with other assets in key consumption markets such as Turkey, India, and China. And 3. Increasing AGT's facility utilization and evolving product mix to improve margins in a supply chain approach to AGT's core pulses business. At September 30, 2017, AGT remained in compliance with all financial covenants. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. As evidenced by these results, imports to key consumption markets have slowed based on supply and demand imbalances that we believe do not appear to affect the underlying demand fundamentals of pulse and staple foods markets. It's simply that markets like India and Turkey are working through their own local production before moving to new crop harvested products from Canada and other origins in periods where they historically imported. While our expectations were for a slow return to traditional shipping in our core pulse and grain business, this recovery to more normalized conditions is now expected to come more slowly than previously estimated. Today, we estimate volume and margin expansion to begin in Q4 2017, with a gradual recovery expected to continue over the subsequent periods. Now, it should be remembered that a large percentage of the world's population depends on sustainably produced vegetable protein from pulses and nutrition from agricultural products and staple foods overall, particularly with increasing global populations and trends towards urbanization. This period historically is the start of the traditional shipping period for global pulses and staple foods, with the end of Q3 marking the harvest period in North America and bringing new stocks into the marketplace. This cyclicality was the basis for our earlier expectation of return to traditional shipping volumes and margins later in this year. However, that oversupply of pulses from a large North American harvest last year, an upcoming Australian harvest, and higher than anticipated production in Russia, Kazakhstan, and other Soviet republics, and a high level of production in India and Turkey were resulting in that supply-demand imbalance. Added to this is a disconnect between North American farmer expectations on their price of their newly harvested products and the workable price for importers in consumption markets. Global prices have been low because of oversupply, and markets will need to work through available product to positively impact prices. The segment has demonstrated that the cyclicality, we believe, will be temporary. I'd like to comment a bit on India and the pulses market. India is a major market for global pulses and has imported quantities of pulses over the past years to fill their own supply-demand gaps and requirements. This has been one of our issues that has affected volumes, with local supply high and prices in India being very low. Importers have been hesitant to take positions on products where they may get caught on the wrong side of price movement. And this has affected the market psyche overall, not only in India, but around the world. Government messaging and non-tariff trade policies are impacting that market psyche as well. It should be noted, though, that much has been made about fumigation policies. Whether granted a temporary exemption or not, This is in place for many countries exporting agriculture and food products to India. The policy is not unique to Canada, it's not unique to Pulses, and it's not unique to AGT individually. This is a systemic agricultural issue for all countries exporting to India. With regards to a resolution on these matters, I continue to have confidence. The Government of Canada is engaged on this matter. We're monitoring the developments and progress closely. We support the position of the pulse industry and its belief that it has a long-term future in supplying pulses to India and to all pulse importing markets. We should note that pulses to India from Canada may be exported still today, even with no fumigation exemption. It results in the payment by the importer of a $12 to $14 penalty for fumigation at cargo arrival. In the quarter, we completed our agreement with Fairfax Financial as a strategic partner. This provides numerous advantages for AGT for its business, including emerging markets growth potential, particularly as we look forward to the future in India and Africa, delevering of our balance sheet to provide the necessary liquidity for current and future growth, including strategic investments and acquisitions, as well as strategic direction and input at our board level. We're pleased to have them on board and confident in our ability together to grow the AGT business. The recent Fairfax financing allowed us, as Laurie mentioned, to reduce our net debt by 29%. This certainly has assisted us in this period of supply-demand imbalance of the world pulse market and allows us to continue to execute our strategy and business plan. As we've stated in the past, we believe that Prem Watsa, Paul Rivette, and the Fairfax team and its affiliate investee companies around the world provide us with exceptional partnerships. AGT is a business that has many origins and market dynamics, and we've made strategic investments in key areas that we believe will well position us in periods where market conditions are affected by these dynamics. I just want to note a few things to close out. The earnings constraints we see as temporary. Management believes that margins are bottoming. Signs of recovery are beginning to be evident as the market and crop supplies of pulses available from the North American harvest and local supplies reconcile more into a supply-demand balance. Our utilization of our factory assets is expected to gradually rise as 2017 closes out and into 2018. Local stocks are going to be consumed and new crop supplies will be constrained in the future. We believe as market dynamics lead to less acres being planted in other origins. I also want to note that our underlying profitability model is unchanged. We went through this cyclical pattern once before in 2011 and 2012. Prior to that, the cyclical impact of the current environment, we had relatively stable and consistent profitability in a period spanning 11 quarters from June 30th, 2014 to December 31st, 2016, where we averaged over $55 EBITDA per ton compared to the $23 that we saw in this quarter. The results in Q3 matched the trough of the last cycle in Q1-12, after which our margins recovered to the level seen during that 11-quarter period. During the relative period of stable and growing earnings, our food ingredient and packaged foods business was ramping up. Management is confident that the fundamental earnings power of our strategically located assets in our five continents are not materially changed when considering our long-term future. Sub 5% adjusted EBITDA margins have been rare in our historical context and more common in a commodity price decline market where sharp decreases in the international wholesale price of pulses, grains are magnified by the reluctance of North American farmers to support international sales. Prices are beginning to show signs of stability, with international prices moving within a tight band, and North American markets are adjusting to such pricing. Management expects the convergence will become more visible early in 2018 as crop conditions in India become better known to international markets. Our food ingredient business continues to advance. When we look at it now, four production lines are commissioned and operating at approximately 90% utilization on four lines. Tons are up when comparing Q3 2017 to Q3 2016. Margins are stable. And the utilization of starches, flours, fibers, and proteins are increasing both in pet food and food applications. The different market dynamics in this segment, as the buying decisions of large food, pet food, and retail clients, they're not impacted by the same sentiment and supply-demand conditions in our traditional pulse consumption markets. We like that diversification. When we look at the segment, it contributed over 50% of our earnings in 2017, with only 18% of the tons handled. This will allow us to continue to be stabilized and continue to see the benefits as we grow forward. As Lori mentioned, our operating liquidity is at an all-time high, with net debt reduction of 29%, and with available credit lines, utilization of our current operating credit at $22.7 million out of a total of $255 million available. So just to conclude, as AGT can't control the timing of market recovery, we're going to continue to focus on our strategy of being streamlined, efficient, responsible with our production, inventory, and purchases. We're going to do our best to maximize cash flow and safeguard our capital in this period. Ultimately, it's our goal to remain competitive and position the company to ensure that we have the ability to be the first to respond when the markets call for more pulses. And we expect that to come soon. I thank you for your interest in AGT Foods, and I'm going to turn it back over to Omar for questions.
Thanks, Murad. Operator, I think we'll start the Q&A, please.
Certainly. We'll now begin the question and answer session. To join the question queue, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. You'll hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. In order to accommodate as many callers as possible, we ask you to limit questions to one. You are welcome to rejoin the queue if you have additional questions. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. We will pause a moment for callers to join the queue. Our first question comes from Jacob Bout from CIBC.
Good morning.
Morning.
So you talk a bit that margins and that things seem to be bottoming here. Can you talk a bit about the evidence behind that? And I know you saying that you know the first quarter 2012 was the last time you saw this bottom. Is this a 5-year cycle? And how long do you think it's going to take for the industry to work through the current inventory?
Yeah, let me break that down, Jacob, into the parts of it, I guess. You know, the first you know part in terms of our view of the you know potential for a near term improvement in the margin profile. What we're seeing is we're now seeing, you know, a bit more stability in terms of the local price in consumption markets. So you know where we were fighting you know over the last number of months is international markets were declining, while local farmer level in North America was actually stable, and you know farmers were resisting letting stocks go. Old crop stocks were at higher levels when new crop came in August, September, and you know by the way, you know we didn't make much commentary, but you know slightly above average in yield, but literally perfect quality, the best quality we've seen in the last decade in the Canadian crop. What that's led to now is it has led to markets coming more into balance on pricing. So farmer level in Canada is coming down. International markets are stabilizing, you know, which we think will assist us in executing the processing business model that we really focus on. And so, you know, that's one, you know, data point that I think, you know, gives us a relative level of confidence. Secondly, new crop supplies of green lentils, chickpeas, you know, crops that weren't available in the July-August period in this quarter are now available. So, you know, our order book, when we look at our October, November, December, you know, order books and you know, those types. We have a good mix of pulses, which should lead us to an improvement in margin. And, you know, we're seeing the turkey market stabilize as well, which I think, you know, this quarter was a tough quarter there as their market came down dramatically, you know, as we were working through the stocks that were remaining from the old crop. So, you know, all of those things give us a relative level of confidence. In terms of the trough commentary that we gave, you know, we feel that it could be, you know, relatively similar to, you know, the last time. But I do want to say the last cycle that we went through was a geopolitical macroeconomic cycle, you know, related to Arab Spring, European debt crisis. It took a little bit longer in that one, in our opinion, because the forces were so diverse, you know, generational political change in the Middle East, you know, Mubarak regimes, Gaddafi regimes fell, all those kinds of things, and then the European debt crisis and liquidity crisis followed. This year, we have a demand-supply imbalance. I mean, these things resolve themselves quite quickly. And, you know, with boots on the ground, we're starting to see, you know, anecdotal evidence of, you know, lower seed sales, for instance. We expect the cycle to run in the way that high prices lead to record acres. Oversupply leads to market correction. Market correction leads to less acres, and the cycle begins again. So we feel quite confident that we're getting back into that more normal period.
Our next question comes from Joel Jackson from BMO Capital Markets.
Hi, Murad. I think I'll follow up on that line of questioning. I understand higher prices lead to lower prices, but there also could be something going on structurally in India where, I mean, you can read about this every day, where the Indian government, you know, if acres of pulses will continue to be over 20 million tons, production of acre pulses will be over 20 million tons as they achieved in the last cycle, and they're down about a million this year after Kharif. But if they can keep doing that, and if a government wants to focus on them being more domestically self-sufficient for pulses, I'm not saying they can do that, but if there's a focus on that and a focus on more acres and better production, couldn't this be a structural problem that you are facing for years?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question, Joel, and this is not a new focus for the government. And, you know, fundamentally, nothing's changed. They have a, you know, continued reliance on monsoon rain collection systems for agricultural irrigation. The pulses market is growing by 1 million tons per year of consumption. So, you know, how we calculate that figure is 38 million population growth, an average of 16 kilograms per person, you know, leads to an average of about 550,000 tons per year of annual growth just from population. And then if we factor in a small factor on income growth and 150 million middle class, we're over 1 million tons per year of growth in consumption in India. And so, you know, even the, like, I got to tell you, if government there wasn't focusing on local production increase, you know, they would actually be in a critical problem within 10 years. So, you know, if the current consumption is 23 to 24 million tons, and the five-year average, I mean, this year they did produce 23 or 24, and they imported. But if we look at the last, you know, 5 years of production, it averaged 17.5 million or 18 million max. So from that perspective, we expect that we're going to see a shift in acres. What we're going to see is we're still going to see production, but it's going to move into crops that are more sure and easy for growers. We're expecting more wheat, more cotton, less pulses coming up for the March harvest. That's the key one for us is the lentil and desi chickpea, you know, harvest as it affects lentils and yellow peas. So we don't believe that there's a structural shift. We believe that the population and income growth needs both sides. Imports are going to grow and local production will grow as well as India attempts to have a regulated food inflation and self-sufficiency impulses, you know, from both import and local production.
Our next question comes from Steve Hansen from Raymond James.
Yeah, good morning. Just a question on sort of the strategic options you might be pursuing through the downturn. You know, the common adage is never waste a good crisis. I'm just trying to get a sense for, with your added flexibility here now with Fairfax having come in and the balance sheet giving a bit more optionality. I mean, are you still looking at or have you started to look at, I guess is a better question, any of these strategic options that might be available? Are we still too early in sort of this sort of new cyclical part of the process, if you will? Or is it better to wait for, in your mind, or should you start looking now?
You know, Steve, I think that that the strategy for us, because we believe that this is a supply-demand imbalance that's going to be resolved relatively, you know, quickly over the coming quarters, we're not deviating from the strategy. We're really focused on, you know, as Lori mentioned in her comments, the pillars of, you know, ramping up that food ingredient and packaged foods. I mean, you can't ignore the diversification benefit, you know, of that segment and how it balances our pulse business. So, you know, we're looking now, line four is running at 90% utilization. You know, it's only been two quarters that we've been running it. So we want a couple of more quarters just to ensure that that, you know, not only the sales will continue, but the margins will continue on the progression that we see. And then you're likely going to see expansion in that particular area. We're looking at, you know, value-added production of some of our food ingredient streams. You know, we've been talking about in our MD&A, whether it be, you know, pasta production from pulse ingredients or, you know, food ingredient, you know, more blending and you know, mixes and premixes and those kinds of things to get more inclusion into food products. We're going to be focusing on that area. And then, of course, ramping up this bulk platform. Let's not forget that we deployed, you know, about $100 million in capital into a railway system and a bulk handling infrastructure. We had the Canest acquisition in Montreal, which was a small one. We have Thunder Bay running. We're looking at West Coast options now. We're going to stick to the plan. You know, the liquidity gives us flexibility as we look into that 2-3-4 year cycle, but we're really going to stick to recovery, our plan on free cash flow. You know, this is a bump in the road. It's not a change in the path. And we're going to focus on cost and efficiency, get through this blip, and return back to a very strong company.
Our next question comes from Greg Coleman of National Bank Financial.
Hey, Murad. You mentioned there you get line four kicking into gear as we take a look at the ingredients section. I was wondering if you could comment on the tonnage reduction that we saw sequentially in the ingredients division there, down about 20% or so. I know it's up year over year, but we would have expected line four, you know, being commissioned in Q2 and then kicking into full gear in Q3 to cause tonnage increase, and that's not what we saw. Could you just give us a bit of color there?
Well, you know, actually, Greg, what you don't see and what we said in the MD&A is that tonnage in the food ingredients part of that segment was up quarter over quarter. And, you know, so the reduction was, this is the cyclical period where our pasta and our retail packaged foods business, you know, goes into a production cycle over the summer, and then those tons get invoiced out in the fourth quarter. So, you know, people just don't eat as much, you know, canned, retail packed, you know, pasta and things in the summer months. And so from that perspective, you know, you really do have to look at a Q3 2016 over a Q3 2017 to be able to look at the normal seasonal trend in that segment. So tons were up, and they were up quite materially. I think if I remember correctly, the tons in the food ingredient segment were up about 25% year over year. So we are seeing that benefit. And, you know, the tonnage reduction Q2 to Q3 is a normal cyclical thing that we saw last year, too. And so there's no change. It's really almost entirely, you know, pasta and a little bit of our South Africa side. But that tonnage reduction is normal seasonal trend. Margins were stable, which I think was a positive indicator in that, you know, we still had seasonally high prices on the pea stocks that were remaining in the July-August period. So we're expecting that new crop supplies and, you know, kind of the sluggish demand on the export side could assist us in having both stability and the potential of some modest margin expansion in our food ingredient segment as we go forward over the next few quarters. So, you know, we're quite optimistic that it's the right business, it's cyclically balancing, and we're going to focus on expanding that out in 2018 and 2019 for sure.
Our next question comes from Sehan Tunke from GMP Securities.
Good morning, team. Just a quick question from me and a follow-up on the ingredients business point of discussion. You mentioned now in this MD&A and in the past couple of MD&As that you're seeing some pricing pressure due to the impact of lower corn feed prices on the ingredients business. Just wondering where that stands now and how you see the impact of corn feed prices extending into results over the near term. Thanks.
Yeah, good question. You know, corn, you know, obviously has been also relatively, you know, price pressured. And, you know, we saw that in terms of that reduction in corn and the high pulse prices were leading to that kind of pressure on the correlation of our starch fractions in particular. That's the byproduct from the protein production. But, you know, what we've been seeing is relatively stable prices on that. You know, we've been actually working quite diligently to ensure that we minimize the amount of that product going into any feed markets at all. Because the minute we're subject to, let's say, the chicken feed market or the animal feed market for our fraction, we are subject to that corn price pressure. And, you know, I can happily report that we had very modest sales into the feed segment. You know, so we have managed to transition a few of those, you know, former, say, you know, poultry feed opportunities into, you know, either, you know, flour opportunities for extrusion for food or for pet food. So we've been having, you know, quite a focus on the replacement of potato starch, tapioca starch, and, you know, other, you know, imported starch sources, you know, in particular for food products on the gluten-free side and for pet food on the alternative diet blends. So, you know, pretty modest, you know, effect of that corn pressure now, but it's still a you know, pricing factor that, you know, we watch very, very closely. We're quite optimistic, though, that the stability in the pulse prices and that reduction that's been happening on the North American side to balance the markets because of the sluggish export demand is going to benefit this segment in the near term.
Our next question comes from John Chu from Laurentian Bank Securities.
Hi, good morning. So just on the pulse ingredients, it sounds like line number five, there won't be a decision on that for a couple of quarters based on what you said earlier. And so how does that compare to some of these new post-fractionation plants we're seeing popping up in Canada where there's quite a bit of production coming online and in some instances it looks like it may surpass what AGT has in total production. So how do you kind of balance that competition that you're seeing there with your growth plans for what you're trying to do in Minot?
Okay, well, let's just be very, very clear. All, to my knowledge, all of the announcements are for isolate plants. We're in the production of flours, fractions, and granulated, you know, products that have not been put through a wet milling, you know, chemical solvent transformation process. So we have natural, clean label, you know, flours and fractions for the food and pet food industry, with the proteins, you know, relatively intact. So it's a very different product than the isolates that are being discussed. And, you know, when we turn around and look at, you know, the scale of those, you know, there's a strong market for isolates, and it may be something that we'll look at in the future as well. It's growing. But it really doesn't affect the demand profile and the growth plans that we have at Minot. They are entirely different products. And they're entirely different segments. Like, for instance, we don't go into, you know, clear beverages. If you want a protein boost on a clear beverage, you're going to go with an isolate because it dissolves entirely in water. But if you're going to go for an extruded snack with a protein boost, you're likely not going to use isolate. You're going to use a protein concentrate that's natural, so you can call it flour and have a clean label as you go forward, like Frito-Lay did with the Sunship, for instance. So, you know, I don't see them being a competition. I actually see these announcements as, you know, continued proof of concept. I like scale. So I never look at, you know, being a first mover that scale is going to be competition. For me, scale is actually giving more incentive for the food companies to ramp up their production. We compete well, John, with the world, and we've continued to prove that. you know, as we go forward. And I got to tell you, a five-year first-mover advantage shouldn't be diminished by anyone. You know, the R&D work that we've done at our R&D and Application Center and our partnerships that we have with the global food companies, you know, certainly isn't something easy to replicate and jump into and circumvent. So we're quite confident in our market position. The line five that you mentioned, you know, look, you know, we're two quarters into line four. It's running at high utilization. We like the margin profile. We want to be sure that, you know, that volume is going to continue. And you'll remember, we have the plug-and-play model. The building's already there. 6 months later, we can have a line running. So, you know, those decisions will be forthcoming in the near term.
Our next question is from Joel Jackson of BMO Capital Markets.
Hi, thanks for taking a follow-up. Back on the food and packaged business, I think in your release you talked about the four lines at 90%. So a couple questions. So first, were the three, like, is that an average of the four? Like, what were the different lines doing? And then if I extrapolate properly, it seems like your non-Minot volume growth was about flat year over year. What should we expect going forward in 18 for the non-Minot volume growth? Thanks.
Okay, so if I want to, just to understand your question, Joel, I'm going to answer what I think is the first part. When I say 90% utilization, that would infer that three lines are running at full utilization and the fourth line is running at 90%. So we take our total capacity, right, you know, which we've kind of said is, you know, around 140,000 tons. And, you know, we are talking about where we're running this quarter, you know, in terms of that overall quarterly utilization. So, you know, very high utilization, even in a period where, you know, we had relatively seasonal demand. I mean, a lot of the pet food manufacturers, for instance, do their summer maintenance shutdowns in July, August. So, you know, we've produced the product, it's ready, it's been shipping, or it's already shipped now because we're into November. But, you know, that that side is going well. So, you know, again, that last 10%, you know, capacity, we expect to be, you know, moving out in 2018. And then we still have some granulated flour and fiber capacity that we added last year that we'll be able to, you know, continue to fill as we move forward. The non-Minot, you know, packaged foods business would be pretty much the pasta and then the retail business in both South Africa and Canada. And, you know, those tons were stable year over year. But we do expect growth, as we did add a pasta line earlier this year. And sales programs are emerging, you know, in that particular area. You'll notice a number of new President's Choice offerings in the Loblaws system, you know, which were, you know, some were just production initiatives for us. Others are innovation initiatives. So if you go to the Loblaws shelf now, you'll see outer space, zoo animals, and under the sea pasta, which are pea protein, oat fiber fortified pastas, which are children's pastas that were part of our innovation program. So that is the linkage of our food ingredients and our pasta business, which is an area which we see in the future as, you know, a potential growth area for us, being both the major pulse ingredients producer and a major pasta producer in the world. So that flat result, you know, I think we will see a boost in those tons and that utilization as we go forward in 2018.
Our next question comes from Steve Hansen of Raymond James.
Yeah, Imran, just a quick follow-up on your strategic relationships in the food and packaging ingredient space. You know, how do you feel about the existing relationships today, Ingredion in particular? Are they providing the value you'd like to see? Are there additional partners that you might want to see tackling different markets? Just give us an update on the status there, because you've had some different relationships change over time in the past. Thanks.
Yeah, our Ingredion relationship, we're 3.5 years into a five-year agreement, and you know, annually, and actually every quarter, we evaluate that that relationship, and you know, we look at the effectiveness of that. You know, one of the things that I've said from very early on is that you know, we're not just a supplier into a marketing agreement to Ingredion or to anybody else. We're an active participant in application development. We sit at the table, and in many of the tables, we lead the relationship. We don't follow the relationship. And so, you know, I'm very happy with the breadth and depth of the contact that we have with the major global CPG companies. And, you know, we are not only a afterthought, but we're actively involved in pipeline developments for a number of major global food companies and pet food manufacturers around the world in their innovation pipelines. And so that's the position that you want to be in. That's the position that safeguards your market position against the emerging, quote, competition that comes into the market as the market expands. You know, because you can produce, but if you can't sell and you don't have the sophistication on innovation and application, you won't survive in this business. And we expended a tremendous amount of capital and resources on R&D, you know, that is leading to, you know, not only those strategic relationships, but, you know, there's some intellectual property that's being developed. You know, some patents are pending already and for AGT, and we believe that that will give us a very strong position as we go forward. So we evaluate those relationships, and you know, I will tell you that no matter what those relationships are, AGT is going to be at the forefront of driving our own growth and prosperity in that sector. We believe it's part of our future. We believe that we've done relatively well, and we believe that the future is going to be even brighter on that.
Thank you very much, Murad. This brings us to the end of our questions available in the session. I'd like to thank you all for joining us on our call this morning. I'd like to remind anyone that's still on the call, if you have any follow-up questions, you can feel free to contact us at our Regina head office, and we'd be more than happy to follow up with you. So again, thank you for attending our conference call this morning, and I wish you all a very good day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating, and have a pleasant day.